when Jesus had finished saying all these things, the crowds looked at him with astonishment because he taught as one having authority and not as one of their scribes. That is not in today's reading, but it is at the end of this reading, this whole block of teaching that Matthew gives us called the Sermon on the Mount. And I think that word authority is the key to what Jesus is talking about. And I think actually that it's the key to all of the readings that we have today. One who has authority. But the problem for us, I think, is often, what does that mean? And our history as human beings, as a church, as a culture, as a nation, is often wrapped up in confusion around what authority is and how actually it's expressed. And I think that you've heard me say this before, but I often repeat myself. Authority is such a rich word for me because I see in it that word author. And we know what authors do. Authors reveal themselves. If they are good, they don't teach us something new or really something profound as much as they astonish us. Because we read them and we find an identification. They seem to speak to the deepest part of us. And that understanding of authorship and authority, and another word that uses that same root, authenticity, I think cuts to the very heart of what all of those words are about and what we've heard today in the readings and especially in the gospel. But the difficulty for us around authority or authorship and speaking the deepest core of our being or inviting that from others, and authenticity, being able to express who we really are and call people into that, is rooted in our difficulty, our human condition of context. And where we find ourselves, whether it's a place we want to be or whether it's a place we don't want to be, and our ability to be calm, regardless of where that place is. So here is a priest standing before you who gets the duty of teaching and preaching today on this. And it's a really rich context for me because I'm dumped in the middle of these readings that are all about authors and teachers and profound statements. But I don't think that any of those teachers or authors, whether it was Moses or whether it was Paul or whether it was Christ or whether it's Brad or anyone else, is really doing anything but trying to find center in God. And that is the real sense of author, isn't it? This reading out of Deuteronomy is so beautiful and so rich. I set before you today life and prosperity or death and adversity. Choose life. Moses is said to have said. And yet the context of this reading and this writing of Deuteronomy is that it was long after Moses' death, probably. And that the book of Deuteronomy, as we have it, really witnessed the life of the people in the land for possibly generations. And yet they always had to be brought back to their context because they weren't finding life in the land the way they were living it to be expressive of what it was supposed to have been in God's promise to bring them there. And we know what happens to the book of Deuteronomy through the ages. It becomes the vehicle for control. It becomes the vehicle for determining whether you're really religious and this is the God you want. It's filled out with laws and obligations that we find today absolutely, if not absurd, oppressing. But in their context, those laws were to bring them to that authentic way of living, to distinguish them as a people that God had chosen, rather than a people that they found themselves in the midst of. And that call was always one of authenticity. It was a call to compassion. It was a call to a very new way of thinking. It was a call to be utterly different from those around you who practiced injustice and dissension and adversity. But you see what we've made that very book itself. One that we've just dismissed because it brings too much adversity. Authentic living in compassion. I think that that is what Paul is talking about in this beautiful letter to the Corinthians, one that we hold up as a prize of Christian writing, if not the most beautiful of the Christian writings, and that beautiful discourse we will get about love and what love is, and how it is that we begin to see as adults of faith rather than children of faith. And this is what Paul is talking about to this community today when he uses those rich images of weaning you away. I'm feeding you like little babies, soft, milky food until you're able to chew. And we know what happened to that community of Corinthians. They did exactly the same thing. They begin to celebrate eventually a Eucharist and a feast of love that was marked with adversity and exclusion. And this is the right way to do it, and that's the wrong way. Or you're fit to be here, so you get to drink before dinner. And by the end of this reality, Paul is talking to them about a celebration that is exactly not what it's supposed to be. That it is a feast that invites those who are still children, and that the way in which we bring them in is to be soft with them and invite them with compassion and with justice. And then Jesus and a gospel. This image and this teaching that he gives us today, in which we in our Christian tradition have long approached as some new profound way of living that dismisses the old law that's too oppressive. This reading today follows immediately from last week, in which Jesus is very clear to say, don't think I've come to take any of that law away. The context that I'm in is showing you how you live it in fulfillment, not replacing it, and to take you back to what that really is. And so as we look at this teaching today, it's easy to see that they look like antithetical remarks. You've heard it said, but I tell you, as if he's replacing something. But if you look at that context and you put it into Matthew's community and how they would see it, they would know that he's not replacing anything, but he's diving into the very root of how those bad practices come about. That anger and dissension and unsettlement is the root of where ultimately murder will come from. That it isn't actually just a sexual act or even a violation of another man's property that constitutes breaking a law. It's that inner disposition that even looks at someone else's property or someone else's mate or someone else's partner with an envy that you should be in that place rather than someone else. It's ultimately that unsettlement that we have, that needing to be in control, that need for authority, that takes us away from our ultimate sense of authority, an authentic reality that displays the presence of God in the place in which we are. I think that it's a rich picture, if you will, of our spiritual journey through all of these readings, spiritual journeys that that earliest community had in the land, spiritual journeys that Paul's community is trying to make in the presence of the Corinthian Las Vegas culture it found itself in, and the spiritual journey that Matthew's community and the followers of Jesus are trying to make in the face of that impending death that they know will come to Jesus. How do we stay in that place which life and death are set before us and choose life, which will lead to death for us, but will lead us to a deeper reality of life and authentic experience in God? I couldn't help, as I was driving down here this morning from Portland, having those readings really visually in front of me. I'd spent the weekend celebrating my birthday early with a friend who shares our birth date. We're really spiritual mates that kind of found each other by accident, and we share the same birth date. And in an odd act of coincidence, she's 11 years older than I am. And I realized just this week that this is the year in which we crossed again, because she was born in 1953 and she's celebrating her 64th birthday. And I was born in 1964 and I'm celebrating my 53rd birthday. There's that intersection, right, in which ultimately we really are all one, different places in that race. And when we meet those people and those contexts in which the sacred is present, there it is. It's the same, right? So I'm driving down this morning, and it was just such a wild experience. I was so happy that I was leaving Portland and it wasn't raining or snowing for once in my life. And steady traffic. And I kept noticing that the temperature kept dropping, right? Till I got to Salem, it was already 31 degrees, right? Okay, it's clear, that's fine. And then you know that road, you pass out of Salem and you enter like into another world where all of a sudden it's foggy and it's frosty and the temperature is now 29 degrees and I turn the fog lights on and I think, okay, there could be black ice and I'm okay. And then I come out somewhere up around Albany or before that, and it's absolutely clear. It's 28 degrees, but there's not a bit of fog, and you can start to see the dawn and that beautiful kind of rosy sky over the mountains, and it's just so clear. And then, dun, dun, dun. All of a sudden, I'm back into fog. I couldn't see anything. I mean, it was so disarming that I just kept driving. It was as close as it could have ever been. And yet something odd happened as I got closer to Eugene, only, I guess, about, I don't know, 17 miles out. It was total fog, but it was so light that it was almost clearer, if you will, than when I was up in skies, you know, clear looking at the sunrise. And I thought, isn't this weird? I don't know where I'm at. I haven't any idea. I'm somewhere between here and there. And yet I feel so kind of familiar. I can't see anything in front of me. And the next thing you know, there's the Pape light. And then I'm at Coburg Road. And I'm like, I know exactly where I'm at, but I still can't see anything. And I started to think, there you are, Brad. There is the metaphor and the reality of our spiritual life. And I think what all these readings are talking about, that no matter where we are and how clear we might see things, there's always something that probably is wrong with our vision. Or no matter how blinding everything is, there's this point at which you know where you are, even if it's right in front of you and you can't see it. I set before you life and death. Choose life. It's always right there. And I thought, here I come to a community that's going to celebrate that today by going to an annual meeting, which for many of us feels like death, doesn't it? We have to do it every year. But it is the richest thing for us. And I hope when you go to that meeting today, you will see that you are sitting down like Jesus did in the middle of this community. And here before you is what this community has done this year. All of its ministry, all of its grief. I look around and I know people who know that reality from just a few months ago were in that place of death. And now we're not. That annual meeting is like Moses speaking to that community. It's like Paul speaking to that community. It's like Jesus speaking to Matthew's community. How do we sit in our center in all of that unknown, in all of the unknown of the last week, in all that turmoil of voices, in all that turmoil of abandonment and walls, and people who are happy about an election, and people who are not, and know that we're all really in the same place. And we get to do that here at St. Mary's today. We get to go up to that meeting, and then we get to talk to a vestry and say, this is how we envision our goals and what they should be for the next year. And we know already that we probably won't recognize those the way they should be. Something will change. There might be dissension. That's exactly what we're supposed to do. Come back to that place over and over that stands between life and death. The spiritual journey in fog, the spiritual journey in anxiety, the spiritual journey in death, the spiritual journey of the annual meeting, the spiritual journey of this community that comes together week after week after week, and in the middle of adversity, in the middle of prosperity, says, we find here the very building and being of God, as Paul says to that community. And Jesus says to that community, one with authority, who lives out an authentic life. I set before you life and prosperity, or death and adversity. Choose life. Amen.